Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz is known for intimate conversation about the world of jazz and the characters that inhabit it. So who better to take the guest chair than Gene Bach, the director and writer of the Oscar-nominated documentary A Great Day in Harlem, a 1994 film about one of the most iconic images in jazz, taken on an August morning in 1958. Nearly 60 musicians gathered on a Harlem stoop to pose for this group portrait taken by photographer Art Kane. Although he had never taken any professional photographs, Kane was a dyed-in-the-wool jazz enthusiast and suggested that a group photograph be taken in Harlem, the cradle of New York jazz. This photo epitomizes the schmoozing disorganization and innate coolness that was present for those few hours. Never before nor since were so many jazz legends in one place. It is amazing that so many were there, since jazz musicians are night creatures. And one musician at the shoot was heard to say that he was astonished to discover that there were 2 10 o'clocks in each day. This famous photo was published in Esquire magazine in the January 1959 issue and has gone on to take many other forms, including being the star of Gene's film. As you listen to today's program, you can find Art Kane's photograph of A Great Day in Harlem, along with more information about the famous image at pianojazz.npr.org. Gene Bach has been a passionate jazz fan since he was 18 years old, hanging out with Duke Ellington and Roy Eldridge. Gene's credits include jazz journalist and radio producer, as well as a dear friend of Marion McPartland. Let's listen now as Marion and Gene talk about musicians in the photo, and Marion plays some excerpts from past piano jazz shows when they were her guests.
Gene, welcome to Piano Jazz. Wonderful.
Thank you, and it's going
to
be fun being on the other side of the microphone.
The film that you made is just priceless, and you have all the musicians who were in the picture, but who were also on my show.
Yes, most of them were, that's true. Can I tell you that you were the first person I interviewed, and I was really green. I didn't know what I was doing, but it came off so well. There was a restaurant in the village that had that picture on the wall, so I thought, oh, that's great. So we met, you and I, at the place and took the pictures. But I thought it's symbolic because I guess I came into your life. Well, I knew Jimmy in Chicago, so when you...
Who am I, Jimmy?
You're Jimmy.
McPartland.
McPartland, yes.
Bringing Jimmy into my mind made me remember Jimmy didn't get up, which made me feel very sad that he...
Oh, listen, the people that didn't make it are all kicking themselves now, if they're still around. It was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, like people like Duke not being there.
Well, he was on the road. I have a few... This one I would do... promotion for the movie, people would always raise their hand and say, where is Stan Kenton? Well, I didn't know where he was, but when they'd bring up Miles Davis, I had a postcard from Miles, which I saved, and I'd bring it out of my handbag. It was from Germany. And then Ellington, we knew, was on the road, but 3 of his sidemen who had left him were in this photograph. Lawrence Brown, I think he's behind you, two
yes,
girls.
Right.
And Rex Stewart. And Sonny Greer.
We have quite a gathering there. Benny Golson and Hank Jones, Dizzy Gillespie, Mary Lou Williams, Milt Hinton, Jerry Mulligan, and Roy Eldridge.
He came just before Dizzy and just after Louis Armstrong, so I think he was always kind of miffed that he didn't have his rightful place in history. But he certainly influenced a lot of people.
I used to see him all the time at Jimmy Ryan's. I would go there when he was playing, and I would sit in. And I remember one night he said to me, Mary, don't get too thin. I like chicks with them big legs. Oh. Isn't that a typical Roy Eldridge?
Oh, God, yes.
We had him on Piano Jazz.
I want to ask you something about things they did years ago that nobody, I don't think people, kids or musicians today even know what you're talking about if you talk about a cutting session. Remember when they had that, where people would go and sit in and really cut somebody to ribbons with their playing?
Yeah.
Tell me some of the people you got involved with in these things.
Oh, I got a real dressing down. You know, Rex Stewart was working in my brother's band, Eli Serenaders. That's before I was playing professionally. And he stayed at our house, and he showed me a couple of riffs. And when Fletcher's band would come to town, he would always bring me and let me sit behind him and show me where he was reading, you know. And by this time, I'm in New York, and I'm working at Small's Paradise. And he came down, and I want him to hear me, you know. You're just like, you're just somebody, like, just like a father to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was standing off the side, and I was signifying, because I, you know, I thought I was, could play, really. Because I spent 8 or 9 hours a day. I had a lot of technique, but I didn't have no kind of heart. I spent all my time learning technique and chops, you know. So Rex picked up the other guy's horn was in the bandstand. He played a little bit. He said, I'll meet you at the Rhythm Club. So Fletcher's band was a real signifying band, you know. Once that something starts like that, they're going to get on the underdog side, you know. Every time I'd play, they would make like I really, really played up a storm, you know. And Rex, they wouldn't make no sound at all. And Rex was getting madder and madder, you know. And I, you know, and I was getting embarrassed because this is the cat I idolized, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They had a thing that they used to do in New York then. If you play in your course, I'll stomp on your last 8 bars. That means I'm coming
okay.
in. So I stomped on Rex, and I screamed a G. About my highest note, G and an A, mm-hmm. I could get an A out.
Mm-hmm.
But I never thought about B flat.
Mm-hmm.
And Rex stomped on me, didn't let the other guys, and he screamed the loudest B flat I'd ever heard in my life. And I'm telling you, it scared me. Yeah, I put my horn down. I said, that's B flat. How did he do that, you know? So I just put my horn in the case, and I was almost in tears, really. And I told the other cats, you can't play as high as me, so you might as well give it up. And that was the end of that contest. But I caught him 2 years later, because I knew, I remembered what he didn't do. He hit that note, but he never played up there and played down and went back up again. And when I met him the next time, I could play up to B-flat and play down, play up and down. So I got him that time. So the next time after that, neither one of us played waiting for the other to do something.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, back to the music. How about I Want a Little Girl? You sing that one, and I'll play it for you.
That'd be nice.
Okay?
I dig that better. I want a little girl to love a lot. I give her everything I got. Just a little girl to fall in love with me. Oh, baby, can't you see? I want a little girl. She don't have to look like the girl in the picture book. But if she can cook, she'll fit me to a tee. Well, she don't have to wave her hair or dress in fancy clothes. I don't even care if she don't wear silken hose. I want a little girl that's all alone. One that I can call my very own. Just a little girl to fall in love with me. Oh, take away, Marion. In fancy clothes. I don't even care if she don't wear silken hose. I want a little girl that's all alone. one that I can call my very own. Just a little girl to fall in love with me. Can't you see? I want a little girl. I want a little girl. I want a little girl to fall in love with me. Baby, can't you see?
I thought he did quite a job on that. I thought.
Yes, that's good. Roy, as you know, played louder and higher and faster and everything than anybody else. And the terrible thing about him was he always wanted to win. And he'd go into a room where they're having a jam session and he'd hit a couple of notes and everybody'd fall over. And it wasn't very gracious of him. But he and Dizzy would hang out and look for sessions. So one night they were going to somebody's place. And as they got there, Dizzy said, "Now, Roy, I'm going to go in first. And then you wait outside." Roy said, "What's that about?" He said, "Because as soon as you get there, you don't know how to act."
He was the guy that said to Roy Eldridge, "Hey, Roy," and made him turn his head away in the photograph, right?
That was a trick. He was playing a trick on poor Roy, who didn't get his picture in the magazine. But that was just his thing. He just was a prankster.
Didn't you make a short movie about Dizzy and his pranks?
Oh, I did. I put together this movie about how Dizzy happened to get fired from Cab Calloway. And he was playing in Cab Calloway's orchestra and always making little spitballs and throwing them down on the stage. A couple hit Cab, and that's how he got fired from Cab Calloway. But that was just his thing. He just was a prankster.
We had Dizzy on Piano Jazz, and he played the horn, and he played piano, too.
Oh, that's great. You know, he advised all the musician friends of his to take up the piano, and they would explain that they didn't play too well, but that Dizzy told them that if they were going to be playing music, they had to learn the piano. And
well, that's certainly a good thing to do, and it certainly was good that he learned the piano.
Yeah.
Trying to emulate him, and when he picked up his horn and played a couple of tunes on the horn, he said to me, "You're playing stiff."
Some certain people can get a stiffness in playing that has nothing to do with gospel or blues or something like that, because they are not stiff in their movements and in their singing and in their playing. One example of that is take someone like Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to write what Aretha Franklin, the beats that she sings, you would be in very serious trouble, because she is in perfect time with the what's name, but it sounds like she's off sometime, you know. To write that down is very, very, very difficult. But she's been doing that since she was about 2 years old.
But still, the rhythm is right there.
But the rhythm is there all the time. It's like rhythm says. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Yeah. That's offbeat. Right. Right. Left, right. Well, let's play a little slower.
Boy, that's one, hard.
Two. No, you're starting on your left hand.
Okay.
Right, left.
See,
when you
definitely
hit the left hand, your right hand stays still. Left, left, left. left, right. Left, 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 right. See what they're doing? Right, 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 right. Left, 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 right. Left, 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 right. Here's the triplets. Right, left, 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 right, left, 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 left. Okay, now here.
Boy, that's hard. Yeah. You know, I just learned something
Well, yes, it is hard with people. The reason I can do it so easily is because I play conga.
Right.
And I play both hands, see?
Mm-hmm.
So, but piano players should do it.
You know what I'd love to do? You're such a fantastic character. I'd just love to see if I could do a little musical thought, my off-the-cuff musical impression of Mr. John Burks Gillespie. Okay?
Definitely, I see.
You know, I think I'm going to try and incorporate some of that mischievous quality you have. And not only that, I'll see if I can include some of those little examples you just gave me. That's really fantastic. That's the best piano lesson I've had in years, Diz.
You're a perfect pupil. Dizzy would be very proud. You weren't even stiff.
Marion McPartland's portrait of Dizzy Gillespie from 1985 when he joined her on Piano Jazz. Marion creating an on-the-spot, improvised musical impression of her guest has become a trademark of the series. We'll be back in just a minute with more of Marion and Gene Box reminiscing about A Great Day in Harlem Photograph, Box film of the same name, and artists that Marion had as guests on Piano Jazz. You can view this historic photograph and find links to more information about A Great Day in Harlem, as well as find artist information, set lists, and more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This is Piano Jazz from NPR.
Marion, if this program were twice as long, I'd make you tell him, you and Thelonious Monk, that's hilarious.
Well, I guess people might like to hear this, that I met Monk on the street and invited him to the Hickory House because I wanted him to hear my version of some of his tunes. So he came in with a friend of his, and they sat in a bat booth, and they talked and talked.
While you were playing?
Oh, yes. They didn't listen at all. And then they at the end of the set, they walked out and left me with the bill.
That's perfect.
That serves me right for being an uppity chick. You know, I shouldn't have done that.
But you have an anecdote out of it, so it's worth it.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I did like Monk, and I guess he liked me because he once, the next set time he saw me, he said, oh, you look marvelous. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, maybe he's trying to make up for the Hickory House.
I'd like to be outstanding, and I found a lot of pictures of him in different crazy costumes, hats and different jackets and things, and one where we had a picture of him, Monk, turning around. One front view and then one side view and showing off something. So I think the story that I've heard is that he wanted to be between two darling ladies, so he got all dressed up in this light color jacket, and there he was between you, which was great.
Yeah, but we didn't think he looked any different from anybody else.
He sure sounded different.
So... But it was funny the way that turned out, because I was next to Mary Lou. And when I was coming from England, she was the first person I was trying to meet. You know, I just had heard of her. And I went all over New York trying to find her, and she was in a little dinky club.
Where I met you, the Downbeat. Remember that little hole in the wall, that little tiny club I think it was 54th.
Yes, 52nd or 54th. Yeah, it was 50. I was Dublin with Billy Taylor.
I know.
And I had a group with me, Benny. What was Kenny Durham?
Yeah.
And Klug. And who else on bass? Oscar
Pettiford. I think,
oh,
was in
terrific.
There. And another time I came in, Percy Heath was there.
Yes.
And Bill Harris was there. Mm-hmm. It was a tiny place, and I remember, I think I had already started at the Hickory House, mm-hmm. and I would run over and just stand in the doorway, you know, with my mouth open, watching you people.
Well, I was
doing
booked in
thing.
As a trio, and when it ended up, I had four men on the line. There was seven of us.
My mind is buzzing with all kinds of things I want to ask you about. And one of them was that tune you wrote out for me years ago. You wrote out this tune.
Scratching the gravel. Thank you.
course, that was a pretty funny tune called Scratching in the Gravel.
That's cute.
Anyway, I really was very fond of her, except she got annoyed with me for doing piano jazz. She said she should have had piano jazz.
Oh, I'm sure she thought that, you know.
So, anyway, we end up being friends, so...
Well, that was my feeling about this whole movie, that the camaraderie was so attractive. You know, people weren't jealous of each other very much. Some were, I guess.
They really weren't. They mostly helped one another, yeah. I found. You were pretty friendly with Hank Jones, weren't you?
Absolutely. And, you know, he was around for such a long while. You got to hear him a lot. So you really got to appreciate him.
I remember the show we did with him, and he played some beautiful stuff.
Well, I thought St. Louis Blues might be kind of nice. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to let you start this out and see where you take me.
Thank you.
A duet of St. Louis Blues with Marion McPartland and her guest Hank Jones from Piano Jazz, recorded in 1980. We'll be back with more of Marion and Gene Bach sharing music and memories about the artists that were part of the photograph, A Great Day in Harlem. You can view this iconic image and find links to more information about A Great Day in Harlem, as well as artist information, set lists, and more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. This is Piano Jazz from NPR.
Just thinking about Milt Hinton and how important he must have been to you in making this film, because both he and his wife Mona were snapping away all the time through the Art Cane photo, and didn't he come off with a lot of pictures for you?
Oh, he did. So many, all his life, he's been, it's a social history, you know, of America. It's just fantastic. And he has several big books, and that you can kind of follow trends in America. But he handed her his camera. She said, "I don't know what to do." He said, "That's all right. Just point it and film."
And if one would not know where the other one was, Milt would give a whistle, and wherever she was, she would appear, or vice versa. She would whistle and he would appear. So
that's helpful.
Remember the day we all had to go up to Harlem for
Oh,
that,
yeah, that's a great picture.
Famous picture.
Yeah, and I was taking pictures,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the photographer took some, but you were taking some on the side.
Yeah, the photographer wanted all of a sudden one group up against the steps.
Yes.
But I saw musicians in their own habitat, water seeking his own level. All the piano players and the ladies were together. That was you and Maxine Sullivan and Mary Williams all standing out there laughing and talking.
Seeking our own level, yeah, huh?
That's right. And all of the drummers were over there in one corner. And I thought this was amazing. So I began to shoot these kind of things with Joe Jones and Gene Krupa and Zooty Singleton and George Wetland and Art Blakey, all these good. And I got pictures of these guys in this kind of group. And so we finally came out with a book called Baseline, with pictures and stories about all these wonderful things.
That's a fabulous book.
Thank you. It's in
its
second printing. And now we've got a new book that's coming out now, and this is called Overtime. It's got all new pictures of different pictures of musicians. I've been trying to photograph and catch all the different group of musicians, and the captions in there about who they played with and the nice things that happened to them.
That's so interesting to me, Dick. That was
I'm so proud of those young men like Wynton Marcellus and Bradford Marcellus and Terrence Blanchard and the whole group of young ones, Scott Hamilton. I knew these kids when they were young, and I feel very good that they feel like they want to be around me sometimes, and they remember me, and I'm very grateful to them.
Well, I mean, they should. You're such a great player. Hey, let's do another tune.
Good.
What else
can
we do? Well, let's have a go at My One and Only Love.
Okay.
Are you going to start this out?
Yeah, I think I was trying to start it out. Hang
okay.
on. Thank you.
Well, that was sensational. Applause, applause.
Well, thank you. Milt took a really magnificent solo in the middle. It was really his tune, and he made the most of it. When he really digs in to take a good solo, there's nobody else like him. Milt was really one of a kind, and now I'm thinking of another one of a kind, Benny Goldsman. Hmm. Do you like him?
I adore him, but he was hard to track down because he had a place, I think a apartment or something in Germany and something on the coast and, I don't know, all over because he was so popular and everybody needed him for things. He did a lot of film work, as you know. When he was in New York, I had a date set up with somebody else and I said, is it all right if Horace Silver comes over and I can do the two of you? So he said, no problem. So here's what happened. He said, Horace, has this ever happened to you when you dream something, dream a tune, and then you wake up and you think, oh, that was lovely, and then it's gone? And Horace agreed, yes, it's terrible. And so he said, that happened to me one time. And when I went to bed, I put a flashlight next to my bed and a pencil and, some paper. And he said, I did wake up, and I thought, I'll just sketch this out and play it in the morning. So when he got down to his studio and played it, he said, you know what it was? It was the verse to Stardust.
Oh, that's funny. I must say I've done things like that myself.
Really?
Yeah. And thought I wrote the next fabulous ballad, but it wasn't. It was something very mediocre. I never came up with the verse of Stardust, but I might have. So more about Benny Goldsman. We had him on Piano Jazz.
Well, I'd like to play one of your probably most played tunes, Whisper Not. I would love to do that. Do you think we could play that on two pianos?
Yeah, let's tackle it.
Okay. Here goes.
Thank you.
A duet with Marion McParland and Benny Goldson, composer of the tune we just heard, Whisper Not. There's more to come with Marion and Gene Bach, remembering the photograph and film of the same name, A Great Day in Harlem. You can view this historic photograph and find links to more information about A Great Day in Harlem on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. This is Piano Jazz from NPR.
Well, I guess when you look at the Art Cain photo, you can see that Jerry Mulligan is one of the youngest ones there. I don't know why that was, but...
Well, he had an interesting start because he was very smart as a young teenager in writing arrangements and everything. And, you know, he was so striking looking. I mean, he was like a matinee idol.
I remember the show we did with Jerry Mulligan very well because I was dying for him to play his horn.
Oh.
And he didn't bring it. He said he left it on the kitchen table.
Mm.
So he does play good piano.
Absolutely.
Now, listen, now you've really got to do a duet. And I'm sort of thinking to myself, maybe we could do one of your tunes if I can play it properly, like Line for Lions.
Mm-hmm. All you have to remember, if we do it in G, that's a B minor, not a B flat. Everybody wants to do that.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Well, it's not funny.
It's logical.
That's it. Let me see if I have the whole thing. Let's see. Because it's much nicer with it. Thank you.
Gene, I've just had a great time. Thank you for coming and being so wonderful. And it's good to talk about the movie.
Yes, very kind of you. Thank you, Marion.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland. Her guest has been Gene Bock, writer and producer of the film documentary Great Day in Harlem. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Matthew McCorkle. I'm mastering engineer David Mitchell. The production manager is Grant Jackson, and the executive producer is Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Jazz Times Magazine, delivering jazz news, insight, and advice since 1970. At newsstands everywhere and on the web at jazztimes.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. This is NPR.